All right, here we go. Overdrive off and running. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan on a beautiful Wednesday afternoon.
Wow.
Here in Toronto. Yeah, how's everyone feeling?
I was thinking of both of you guys this morning. Did you guys get out and tee it because it was a beautiful day or what? How did we shoot? What were we looking at here?
Well, I had some issues out of my place because of this storm over the weekend. You know, we didn't really talk about that
yesterday. By
the way,
what was with this storm? I was in Collingwood. There was no such thing. And I got to my golf course today. There was massive trees. Gonzo.
Everywhere. Everywhere. I mean, there. I was right through kind of through the eye of it, and I was out of power for 36 hours. Like, that's a grind. Two young kids. Like, it was cool the first day. You know, it's something different. There were fireworks going off because it was a long weekend. The second day, you wake up and you're like, this can't continue. Like, we got to get the power going here, and you're helpless. Like, it is not like people are trying to jam you up. It's nothing you can do. A storm came through, and there was, I believe they labeled it a tornado through Uxbridge. Uxbridge got it really bad. But you're right, though. Like, if you were basically in, like, King City North, I believe, you know, certainly Barrie North, it didn't really hit you. And it kind of came through Toronto, but it was more kind of the north end of the city, all the way up to Ottawa. Like, it was a crazy storm.
Well, Kleinburg, I think, where I live, got it, I think, pretty hard. Like,
yes.
I know we had some, you know, mulch blown around. Like, our patio furniture was, like, blown across the, like basically, like, giant chairs, like, just thrown around. I'm not sure if anybody, I hope, I thought I read somebody passed away.
There were some deaths.
Yeah, which is awful. I mean,
oh, it was
obviously
a bad storm, man. And it came out of nowhere. Like, it was beautiful Saturday morning. And I was out to lunch with my kids, and then all of a sudden, the warning popped up on my phone. I don't know if you guys got it, saying, I thought it was an Amber Alert originally because of the way it kind of came up on my phone, and it just said, hey, extreme weather, like, watch yourself. And 2 minutes later, the power was out, and it was bedlam outside.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, like, that's kind of caused problems this week. Minor, first world problems, clearly, but it's a lot of cleanup for a lot of people, and you know, it is
scary.
It is what
stuff.
It is. So.
Scary. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't home. I was in Alberta.
That's right.
But Sam Cicerello sent me a note saying, hey, did you guys get jammed up because of it? Like, I think a lot of people lost power, all that type of stuff.
Big time.
And I think Steph and the kids were away for the day. They were in Mississauga. So I went back on the cameras and just watched, like, the furniture just blow around and stuff. Like, it was crazy. But,
back on the cameras. I love that. it was ugly. So long story short, beautiful day, and hopefully people had a chance to get out there. Someone tweeting in right now saying still no power in parts of Ottawa. Like, it was bad out
terrible.
In Ottawa too. Yeah, it sucks, man. It's really, like, you take that kind of stuff for granted, right?
Well,
like, just flicking a light on and walking into a room.
It's not about heat and all that, but it's about, like, think about your fridge being off. Like, everything's spoiled. Everything ruined.
Go
like
on.
You're
Noodles,
not being,
I have you pegged as a generator guy.
Of course, yes. Yes.
Hazy, not so much.
No, I did not have access to a generator. Guess what I did? I had to call up. My father-in-law came down, and he actually had a two-pack. And we
generators?
Were kind of running back and forth, and it was so we did end up getting the generator going day two.
Dude, the generator's worth the cost, man. Even if it's once every 5 years you use that thing, it's
like a snowblower when, like, crazy snow. You're like, thankfully I purchased this thing. I haven't touched it in 2 years.
Well, the weirdest part about mine is, like, it does, like, a self-test. So it fires up, you know, you can hear it out in the backyard. Like, it'll fire up out of nowhere. It does the self-test to make sure that it's ready to rock type of thing.
Really?
And then it sends you, like, a note on the app, like, hey, we're ready over here if needed. And we've only had it. I've been here, I think, 4 years now almost. And a handful of times it's had to kick in. But it saves you.
Like, oh, it is. It's a great device to have it. I know there's still people in the GTA without power. It's crazy. Like, we're
terrible.
Talking Wednesday. That storm rolled through, and it was like a 15-minute in-and-out storm, but it was blasting, man. Like, it was a nasty, nasty storm. And
I don't know about you guys, but if my power's out, it's an ignorant move. I am going to a friend or family member that has power, and my whole family's going in there until I get power. I'm not living without power.
Yeah, it's a grind. It's a little bit of a grind for sure.
I've been through, like, there was, when I played in Florida, there was a hurricane that hit, and we actually left, Florida a couple days early to go play in Pittsburgh to get away from this hurricane, and they packed up, like, guys that had kids and wives and that, they were on the plane. They took everyone. But when we got back, there was a state of emergency, and there was a curfew. You weren't allowed to, you know, go out after midnight or whatever. And we landed late after the game. It was a very scary scene because trees had been ripped out, buildings had been smashed, and we got a police escort away from the airport, like down the highway. And it was like there was no lights, no nothing. Like literally, giant palm trees had been ripped out, and were across the highway.
Like the highway's down there. Yeah, no, I know.
It was like a war zone. Very, very scary thing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, the hurricane season down in Florida, up and down the East Coast, the Gulf Coast. I mean, they've had some nasty ones over the years.
But I did have power, so a bunch of the guys came and stayed at my house.
A little slumber party.
Yeah. For 3 days. I had beers and I had power. So, like, all the young guys came and crashed at my place for a couple of nice nights.
I like
it was pretty fun.
I like it. Well, I mean, we're – listen, tonight we've got – the Jays are off. They're in L.A. tomorrow. It's going to be Shohei Ohtani.
Well, that's more like it last night.
That's what you're looking for. The bats came alive. Danny Jansen all of a sudden is Jake Taylor just launching – dude, a couple home runs.
We were talking about him, I think, a year and a half ago, saying we don't know of anyone in the big leagues that hits worse than him.
He's been in some ruts. Yeah, at different times in his career, he's been well below the Mendoza line. And this year he's had, you know, some injury problems. And but, you know, the door is there for him to play. It's going to be him and Kirk behind the plate. And the bats came alive. Gausman had himself an outing, which is what you would expect, and that's what he's been doing all year. And, you know, he had an interesting comment after the game. Like, I think just being honest that, you know, the bats have really been a problem for them, and they identify as an offensive juggernaut. And you look at a guy like Gausman who has a 2.25 ERA, and he's 4-3. Now, wins and losses, you know, somewhat antiquated stat for starters in baseball. But this guy has been nothing short of a stud, and he doesn't always get run support. He got it last night, and look what he did. So, I think it was obviously that's what you were waiting for. It was long overdue. And Vladdy hit an absolute rope out of that park, and that was necessary too. How often did we talk about it yesterday? 15 games without a home run.
And only one
in the month of May. Well, he's got two now. And, again, they're going to be playing Shohei Ohtani. Ohtani's expected to be on the mound, and we'll look ahead to that later this hour. Mark Feinsand will join us of MLB.com and MLB Network. So the Battle of Alberta is playing out in a fashion that I did not picture, honestly. I was like everyone was picking Calgary. Like everyone was on Calgary's bandwagon for obvious reasons because of the way they're built, the way that they played all season, the goaltending battle. Like there were a lot of different things that you could check on and say, I like Calgary here, I like Calgary there, I'm good with Calgary in this position. And, you know, it happened again last night where it's 1-0, like 21 seconds into the game, and it's 3-0, 10 minutes into the game. Like, the Oilers just pounce on him. Like, it was an awful mistake by Markstrom. Like, that just was crushing. To fumble that puck and hand it to Nugent Hopkins the way that he did was crushing. And then the Kane goal, the 3-0 goal, it got tipped, but you had to get it somehow, considering the –
yeah, if you're sharp, like you get those saves, like you get a save here and there. I mean, here's the thing. Ultimately, can you point to anybody on that team that has star power that's saying, like, that guy's playing unbelievable for Calgary?
Yeah.
Like, I can't. The Goodrow, Kachuk, Lindholm scored last night. Nice power play shot. But, like, they were the best line in hockey 5-on-5 this season.
And that's
like
their only way out of it, Jamie. If that top line heats up or their goaltender wakes up or they're done.
Yeah.
Maybe
both
of them have to happen.
Well, I think so. Now you're down 3-1. You need both now.
I agree, and I felt bad for Chris Tanev. You know, he's banged up, and he's out there battling, and, you know, Hyman outbattles him and is stronger on his stick in the back door on that goal, in the second goal of the game. But
God, he's been
like,
good, man.
So I good. Thought he has been, but here's what I don't know how you guys felt. So I'm watching this game. It's 3-0. Markstrom makes three big saves early in the second period to kind of like, okay, Edmonton's pushing. It doesn't happen. Then Calgary gets two quick ones. And then I don't know how you guys felt, but with 9 minutes left in the game, that Anderson goal on Mike Smith, like I was like, that's your TSN turning point right there. Like I'm like, Calgary's winning this game and they're going to win
and
the series
is over. It almost felt like. Yeah.
And because, I mean, it happened.
Outrage.
You know what?
Who's he looking at, Noodles, when he's putting his arms
He's looking
up?
At Duncan Keith, because I don't know if Joe has it, but the back view of Anderson shooting this puck down the ice, it goes through a couple bodies and around. Like, he doesn't track it whatsoever. And it is unbelievable how it just finds the back of the net.
It found it somehow. That was that could have ended up in the fifth row, and it wouldn't have made a difference.
Right. All I could think about is, that's the game-tying goal. It doesn't matter if Mike Smith would make 10 saves after that, and if Calgary found a way to win in overtime, even on a breakaway or something that's not Mike Smith's fault. What are we talking about today?
Yeah, it's not Mike goal. Smith. It's like, right? He reacted the way a video game goalie reacts when that type of goal goes in. Like the jigging, and then like he puts his arms up and like goes left and right. It was, I couldn't believe it watching it live. The reaction was raw too, right? Like the crew calling the game.
I think CC was like,
he's like, "What the hell was it?" Like, no one knows. Like, you'd never think that that's ever going in, ever. Anderson just, he didn't know where that was going. Like, it was a knuckle puck that somehow found its way behind the net, or in the net. And at that point, like, that says something about the mojo moving in the direction of Edmonton, which they are creating on their own, and the mojo going the opposite way against Calgary, because You battle back from down 3-0.
Yeah.
You find a miracle to make it 3-3. That building, you could hear a pin drop in there.
Yeah.
It was absolutely ripe for the picking. And what happens? Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, the longest-standing Oiler, wins a battle in front and puts one shelf and closes the game.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Edmonton's just got something cooking here, and they've been, outside of game one, I think they have deserved to be in the lead in this series. I think they've been the better team. And, it's Markstrom's been awful. I mean, his stats are terrible, like, compared to what he's been all year and what he was in the first round. And
agreed.
I did not see that coming.
Well, here's the other thing, too. I don't know how you guys feel about this one as well. Like, if that happened to Edmonton last year or the year previous, like, they're done. Like, I don't think they have the ability to recover if you give up that goal. But, like, you know, guys like Hyman, guys like Duncan Keith, who've kind of seen it all, like, I think they changed the dynamic of that room a little bit. Like, Duncan Keith took a lot of heat this year. Like, you know, his game wasn't up to par. He got injured. But, like, this is where he's earning his money. Like, his calming force. It's all you hear is, here's a guy who's, like, you know, nothing fazes him. He's seen it all, done it all. Same thing. Like, Zach Hyman, like, that's the Zach Hyman they signed. Like, legitimately. Like, you know, the goal
scorer. Guys with edge, Noodles. It's not like people talk about leadership. And guys always don't come up with some heroic speech saying, guys, let's do this or let's do that or back in the day I did this. But when you have guys with some edge, even Evander Kane, say what you want about the guy, but he has some edge. Same with Zach Hyman and Duncan Keith. And maybe that's the recipe you need in situations like that, where it's not about really leadership. It's just about an attitude where you're like, guys, screw it. Keep playing.
Yeah.
And that's where they signed these guys. They brought in Hyman. They brought in Kane, Keith. It's just guys with an edge where it's not like, oh, you know, what are we going to do? Like,
Fogle.
Oh, God, how are – yeah. They just keep playing, and they don't care. They got an attitude. They're like, screw it. Let's keep playing.
And if you get a bunch of them. His attitude to that, too. Mike Smith's a gamer.
He's a gamer.
And he's like, got an edge to him. He's like, screw it. Piss on it. I'm going to keep playing.
Yeah. I loved his comments after. Now, he even said it's easier to talk about this after a win. But he's the type of guy who, if they lost last night, I guarantee you he would have done the media.
Noodles,
and said, you know what, they
won the hockey game with that goal going in. But I don't. You're the goalie guy. If I'm Calgary, I'm thinking maybe there's something there with that one. Like, everything's got to go to the net next game because God knows where his mindset is giving up that goal.
Well, you're right. The other thing, too, though, is Edmonton, that's where I was going, is they found a way to win. Whereas I think in previous years, you're like, that's it, they're done, they can't, you know, they couldn't fight through that adversity. And that was a legitimate, like, you-know-what sandwich handed to them. And the game, they could have just folded and said, you know what, our goalie, he didn't have it tonight, got scored on from the parking lot. Instead, they find a way to win, and you're laughing about it. Like, I don't know how you guys were. I've allowed crappy goals in my career. If we won, like, I'll never forget playing the Toronto Maple Leafs. We won 6-4, and there were two disallowed goals as well. So I allowed six goals that night. And one of the guys on the team said, you did your best, Noodles, but we still won. And I afterwards, on the plane, we were laughing about it because I was like, I was terrible. But the team bailed me out. And Mike Smith, that's a bad goal, but he's a gamer. Like Hayes, you talked about.
Yeah,
this guy
gamers.
Literally comes to play.
Well,
comes to play.
Because I think you can look at that on both ends. I think it bookends the point that you're trying to illustrate. When you get jammed up like that, goes in, Calgary gets a huge break. It's the flukiest goal of the playoffs.
Right.
And yet, to your point, you could have been deflated. You could have said, not our night, and then kind of just pump the brakes and see where it goes. They didn't. They pushed back. They started pushing play. You know, the penalty was big, obviously a four-minute penalty, and that kind of ended the game at that point. But I would argue even the way that they started speaks to the mentality of the Oilers right now compared to where it was in the past and, you know, compared to the team that lives and operates in this town because they have a similar history, the Leafs and the Oilers. Loaded
right.
with talent, great regular seasons, couldn't get over the top. Where instead of the Oilers going into game four saying, we got our split, we're up 2-1, we're playing with house money, they came out and put the pedal to the metal.
Yeah.
And they're up 3-0 in the game 11 minutes into it, right? Yep. Where other teams, like the Leafs, like the Oilers in the past, I think they try to float into the game, let Calgary grab it, and then chase it, try to, you know, a miraculous comeback that falls short, and you say, well, we got our split. Best 2 out of 3, we'll see what happens.
What about Edmonton last year? It was like, well, we can't score against Winnipeg. It's like, it's not happening.
Yeah.
Well,
it's a testament to, I don't know if it's different mentality, things breaking their way. I mean, there's probably a number of things, but they do look like a different team, and as a result, they're up 3-1 in the series.
There was a game against Winnipeg, I have to look it up, where they were up, I think, 3-0 or 4-0, and Winnipeg stormed back and scored like 3 goals in a minute and a half. And then they ended up winning that game in overtime because I think they got swept, but they lost 3 games in overtime, I believe, against Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. And that's what I kept thinking about. Like, you know, Calgary storms back and gets back into the game, and this is a different team this year than the one last year that folded to Winnipeg after Winnipeg got back into the game. And that's, you know, that's personnel, but that's also the growth of the guys in the room, too. Like, I thought McDavid was quiet. He had 2 assists.
Yeah,
you know, Kane gets 2.
He chimed in, yeah.
Yeah, Draisaitl with 3 assists. Like, this, we forget this guy's playing on 1 foot.
Yeah,
and he's still finding a way.
He's playing a ton of minutes still. I mean, it's, Edmonton is in a very good spot. And Calgary, you know, now your back is up against the
tough.
Wall. Like, yeah, it's literally a must win every single night. Like, now you got to win the rest of the way if you want to survive here. And I think Colorado closes tonight back home, which if that ends up being the case, if you're Edmonton, you're like, let's get this done quickly if we can. Because Tampa's sitting back. If Colorado wins tonight and they get to sit back, those are the two best teams in the league right now that are still alive. Tampa in the East, Colorado in the West. And if you give them more time to kind of recalibrate, you know, get over some nicks and bruises, game plan for you, you could be in trouble.
You guys still cool trouble. With the format? It seems like just lightning rods first round and you got the Battle of Alberta in the second round, but are you still like, this is unbelievable, or I don't know where my head's at. I don't know.
I am, because I think the teams that are still in it are really good teams. Like, that's the one thing we talked about going into the playoffs. Like, I think 13 out of the 16 teams were 100-point teams, like, in the playoffs. And L.A. was, like, 99 points. Like, you can argue about the format, but I don't think anybody – there's no Cinderella team here.
No. You're right. You know what it is, Noodles? I'll just be straight up. I'm extremely disappointed that we're talking about the Battle of Alberta right now, and we're not talking about Leafs sweeping Florida.
Yeah.
It's just sometimes I'm like, forget about it, and then I just think about it, and I'm like, come on.
The truth is, it really wouldn't matter what the playoff format was, because the Leafs, they've lost to it all. You know what I mean? They've lost to wild card teams. They've lost to first place teams. They've lost to teams that are lower than them. They've lost on the road. Not doing it today. Interested
not,
in doing it.
We're not right now, because that's revisionist history. So what? Like we can.
Exactly.
It's a giant what if. Like what if this? What if
that's
that?
What I was feeling though, Noodles. I'm like, just 2 minutes ago, I'm like, I can't believe we have to talk about. Not that we have to, but it's like. I think my life would be so much better right now if we were talking about a game 5 or 6 with Leafs Panthers.
Sure we would.
Or anything Leafs still playing.
Yeah, well, no, they're already making signings. That's how far into the offseason they are. They're signing guys.
Well, and you're seeing videos of guys that
they're signing guys.
You know, Nylander over at the Worlds just running
Eric
around
Lindros.
Like all of a sudden he's Tom Wilson, and people are like, "What the hell's going on here?" You know, like
I don't know. What the hell?
look how mean he plays over there. Look at him, violent. Now, who are they playing? Latvia? Like, I think that might be a
exactly.
part of it. It's a little bit different.
Kramer at the dojo.
Yeah.
You know, he's running around.
Is this real? That's real?
It is real.
At the Worlds. Look at him. Look at the back pressure.
Why does he have to run over Latvian guys like he's Eric Lindros in the Bauer commercial, but a guy from Tampa Bay doesn't want to go anywhere? I can't believe this.
Wow.
Well, again, there's a big difference between Eric Chernak waiting for you
and Bob Schmatz behind the net.
Whoever
else
happened. Rick Moranis waiting for you in the corner.
Exactly.
You know, it's a little bit of a different setup.
Either way, with the fogged goggles.
Yeah
but I know that's just a stupid whatever. YouTube or somebody posted that, but what? How does he explain that? What is that?
That's effort, man. Like, that's he's
over
there.
No, I know, but I told you guys, if he does that every shift, he's a top 10 player in the league. And in a playoff series against Tampa, he didn't do it once.
Yeah, it's just different. It's a different animal. Like, you guys know, and we're seeing this firsthand.
I don't know, that video grosses me out, to be honest with you.
But what did you just say about, you know, Edmonton and some of the players that we were talking about? Like, there's an edge to them. Like, you know, there's a bite to their game. And it's not about fighting. That's long gone. There are guys that fight here or there, but it's just winning a loose puck battle when there is contested ice. And we see it constantly. That's all it is. Contested ice. But okay, you can circle 5 or 6 guys on that team. I'm not just singling out William Nylander. There's 5 or 6 guys that aren't named Matthews and Marner and Tavares, because those guys are point producers. They score. But there's other guys that are, you know, lower on that roster that need to bring something else than just skate around.
No kidding, Jamie. And I mentioned it yesterday, and it was you could have I don't care if people keep track of stats or individual stats or whatever the hell they keep track of, but the bottom line is come playoff time, you could have the best, whatever Johnny calls it, underlying numbers. But if you can't battle for, what did you say, contested space?
Contested ice, yes.
Contested ice, battles. It's all about individual battles and being clutch and coming up with a key play. It's pretty simple stuff to me.
Well, it is, but that's the thing that I've always struggled with, guys, is we were arguing about, it's, you know, the refing, and you shouldn't have to build a team for the regular season, one for the playoffs. Well, it's quite evident that, like, the refs haven't been, you know, I know they've been under the gun here, but I'm not seeing too many, you know, yelling and screaming about the refs this round. Are you guys?
Kind of flipped a little bit, because I don't think they're it doesn't seem to be as many penalties. You know, there's also been more lopsided games. Like, that leads to, like, there's more focus on the ref when it's a close game and it might dictate how it's going to play out. But, and the marketplace too, right? Like, if it's a Canadian market, it's going to be loud. If it's a big hockey market, it will be. But, you know, in Carolina, down in Florida, you think the Panthers fans are yelling and screaming about the refs? I don't know. You don't hear it.
Right.
Because I don't get the sense like there's, you know, a lot of focus on it down there. But, yeah, we'll continue to look back on the Battle of Alberta. Carolina, speaking of Carolina, they love playing at home. They hate playing on the road. They cannot win on the road. They're perfect at home, and they are awful on the road. They haven't won a game on the road.
Never know, though. That warrior Freddie Anderson might come back next game.
Just
never
a matter
know.
Of time. Freddie's back in the mix. I think Rod Brindamore is being posed questions again because he's technically practicing again. So we'll get into that. We've got Nick Foligno on the show. Nick's one of the best interviews in the game. He'll join us just after 5 o'clock. Jerry's percentages in about an hour. I look forward to hearing from Jerry. We'll see what's in store with him. He'll have some takes for us. And Mark Feinstein coming up of MLB.com and MLB Network. He's got a book coming out. We'll get into that. Get his take on the Jays. Shohei Ohtani, who the Jays are going to run into. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. So Tom Brady, Mr. NFL analyst of the future, is at it again, claiming he hit a hole in one.
Dude, anyone that believes that video is real is a moron.
Yeah, it's so blatantly edited. The ball, it disappears from the screen, and then it comes back, and it looks pixelated. There it is up on TSN 4. And when he posted it online, right underneath it, he's shilling for, I guess, his own company, selling shirts and pants. And it's like, why not just post the shirt, good-looking shirt? Well, we need some. I mean, it's a cool video, but he didn't hit a hole in one.
It's just
it gets serious, Brady.
How do
you
know?
Guys from laying up or like or no laying up, they're like, why are people believing this? It's nonsense.
No, there's just no way, Noodles. All right, he's got a new book coming out, In the Franchise, New York Yankees Take a More Profound and Unique Journey into the History of Baseball's Most Successful Team. He is Mark Feinsand of MLB.com and MLB Network. How you doing, Mark?
I'm good. How you fellas doing?
We're doing well. I don't know if you saw the Brady video, but are you a believer in technology and editing, or are you a faithful Brady fan and you believe that everything he touches goes in, basically?
Well, the closest I've ever come to a hole-in-one would be watching somebody else hit one, so I've seen them happen, but no, editing is real.
It's a beautiful thing. That's how we look the way we look sometimes on the screen afterwards. Anyway, we find a way to make it look pretty on the show.
I think I'm answering to my own hole in one video.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Maybe he's actually might be onto something. I guess if you have the technology and the support staff and the production team, you can do anything. The Jays are off tonight. They're in LA tomorrow. Shohei Ohtani is slated to be on the mound, and I'm curious, Mark. Like, we've seen him now for years, and last year he wins the MVP, and he does so in a fashion unlike anything we've seen in over 100 years, if ever. But what is more captivating for you when it comes to Ohtani? Is it him on the mound or him at the plate?
Well, I would say it's probably him at the plate because you get to see it more. And obviously, you know, you're talking about a guy who last year, 46 home runs and he led the league in triples. And he really, there's nothing he can't do at the plate. I'd be fascinated to see what he would look like on the mound if he was given a chance to, you know, throw 200 plus innings and what a full season of that would look like. But just the fact that we get a full season out of him at the plate, you know, baseball is all about numbers. Everybody loves numbers in baseball. And so when you can translate his offensive performance to a full season and you can see what a full season looks like, the fact that he goes out there and pitches as well as he does, I think just makes him, all the more of a marvel to watch.
Mark, do you see the team 10 games over 500, the Angels doing something? For several years, it was Mike Trout, best player in the game. They don't do anything as a team. Last year, it was Ohtani, MVP. Still no team success. Is this the year where they kind of, I know they brought in Madden, highly sought after Skip. Is this the year they could turn the corner?
Well, I mean, it seems like they're already turning a corner. Like you mentioned, they are, 10 games over 500. They're right up there in the AL West race, and you know, with the expanded postseason, there's certainly the window is open there for them to get in. We've been talking about the Angels for years and saying if they could just get some pitching to go with that lineup, they'd be really good. And now you look up and down their rotation, And Otani's got a, 2.8 ERA, and Syndergaard's got about a 3 ERA. Patrick Sandoval's been outstanding with an ERA under 2. Michael Lorenzen was a good pickup for them. Detmers has had a couple of big moments, like the no-hitter. So, all of a sudden, there's a rotation there. And Perry Minasian is a guy who I think, if the opportunity is there to bolster his roster come deadline time and the Angels are making a push for a playoff, anything they wouldn't do to try to better those chances.
With Mark Feinstein of MLB.com, MLB Network, the Jays, their bats came alive last night in St. Louis. Gausman had himself an outing like he has all year. He's got a 2.25 ERA, and their staff has been outstanding, and their bullpen has held it together. It's been the offense, as you know, Mark, that has really been perplexing. I mean, people in Toronto can't figure out how the bats have been so cold, and it feels as if it's inevitable, and maybe last night was the icebreaker, that the bats will come alive. If they're healthy, they will come alive. Do you have the same feeling in terms of what is still capable there with the Jays? Everyone was picking them to win the AL East or maybe the World Series. They're a few games above 500. Do you still have the same faith in terms of where their strengths are, the way they're built, and what could still happen with them in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, I don't look at, 6 or 7 weeks and make any definitive statements about a team. You have to assume that Bichette's going to have an OPS over 660 by the end of the season, and then Matt Chapman's going to be, over 640, and Teoscar's not going to be, sub 500 OPS. These are really good hitters. Normally when a team gets off to a start with so many guys having suboptimal years, they find themselves, 10 games under and 12 out. All of a sudden you're looking at a thing like the Red Sox started out. The Jays have managed to stay above 500 and stay in that mix. And if they start to, play the way that they're capable of playing, I don't see any reason why they won't be a postseason team. Will they win the East? I don't know. The Yankees are pretty darn good right now. The Rays are always a tough team to contend with. So, I wasn't sold on them being a lock for the East anyway. But I do think that, barring some catastrophic incidents for them, I don't see any reason why they won't be a playoff team.
Yeah, I'm with you in terms of an evaluation through a quarter of the season, but it does feel like, a couple things have really adjusted over the last few years. One, the expanded playoff and, the drop dead date for a trade deadline. Like, it's really kind of changed the way you see the season and the way you try to, project outwardly in terms of what could happen between now and the deadline and now and the end of the season. And I think it's a good thing for baseball. I think the deadline should be a big celebration. And I like the idea of the expanded playoffs, and I'm curious how you feel about those two items, and I guess more specifically the expanded playoffs because it's more fresh now that we're into almost the end of May.
I like the deadline the way it is. The August trades to me were always very odd because, a team could try to get aggressive and do something, but you needed a player to clear waivers to make it happen, and it was usually big salary dumps. I mean, the only August trade that I can think of that had a really huge impact in the last 10 years of that system was the Verlander trade to Houston, obviously, which changed the course of their season to the point where they were really good and then they became unbeatable with a little help, as we know. But I definitely like that. I like the expanded playoffs as well because the more teams, the more cities that you can keep engaged where – you have a few more teams maybe going for it as opposed to dumping, by the end of July or in this case of this year, early August. I think it's better for the game. I mean, who doesn't love pennant race baseball? And the more markets you can keep engaged in those races, the better. So, a team that might have been in a situation where they're looking at the, what would have been the top two wild card teams and saying, oh, we're not going to catch them. Well, now you don't have to. Now you'd only have to catch that third spot. I like it. I think it's more playoff baseball is good for baseball as far as I'm concerned.
We're chatting with Mark Feinstein. So you got a book coming out June 7th, The Franchise, about the New York Yankees. And I would say the timing it's probably always a good timing to get, a baseball book coming out during the season. But considering the way the Yankees are playing, I would assume that's very fitting for you and the publisher, Mark. And I've been intrigued by the Yankees based on what Aaron Boone said at the end of last season where, he was basically saying there's other teams coming. He was talking about the Jays, among others, and it's like, we really got to figure this out. And it appears as if they have. Again, it's only 40, 45 games. But what of the Yankee season so far makes you believe that this is legit and, you know, maybe they are a team that can contend for a World Series?
Well, you know, the question for me coming into this season was all about their pitching. It was whether or not they would have enough starting pitching behind Gerrit Cole. You know, what would Luis Severino look like coming back from you know, injury? What would, you know, Jordan Montgomery look like with another year under his belt? Jameson Taillon going into his walk year. Nobody even factored Nestor Cortes Jr. into this because why would you? But when you look at what their pitching has done, you know, their five starters have made 42 starts, and I think the highest ERA is about 3.3, and I think that's Gerrit Cole. So if Gerrit Cole is the worst pitcher on your staff, that's a pretty good thing to have, right? You know, I'm not saying Nestor Cortes is going to have an ERA under 2 all year, but could he have an ERA in the mid-2s? Sure, he's shown that he has the capability of doing that. If the pitching can hold up, you know, they have a couple guys in the bullpen who have been real revelations for them, and, you know, Clay Holmes, who's probably going to take over that closer spot while Chapman is out. And maybe never let it go. Michael King has been fantastic for them. Wandy Peralta, they've got these guys who they're not the big names, but they've been really effective. And then obviously when you look at their lineup and, you know, what kind of offensive firepower they can send out there, Rizzo's having a nice year, Stanton's having a really nice year, and then, of course, Judge is, you know, arguably the MVP of the league right now. So there's no reason for me to think the Yankees aren't going to continue to play really well. I mean, you know, they're 30-13. Are they going to continue that pace? Who knows? But, you know, that's like 115 wins. But a 100-win season certainly seems like a very reachable goal for this team.
Mark, what do you think Judge's contract is going to look like? And do you think the Yankees will get it done with him?
Well, if he keeps playing like this, I could see like, you know, 10-year, $700 billion contract.
Reasonable.
The Yankees offer him an extension of 7 and 213. It was about 30.5 a year. He wants to be up in that, you know, Betts Trout annual average value range of that, like, you know, 35, 36. If he puts up an MVP season, he's going to get it. So, you know, I don't think the Yankees would go more than 7, maybe 8. If they're going to go with that high AAV, you know, 7 for 250 to 260 sounds about right. But the tricky part of this whole thing is there's a guy across town named Steve Cohen who has a lot more money than everybody else. And if he decides that he wants Aaron Judge at all costs, he could give him that 8th year. He could give him a 9th year and give him over $300 million if he wants to. This guy is worth $14 billion. So, you know, the Yankees are rolling the dice a little bit by potentially letting Judge get to free agency. But I always point out, the Yankees have not lost one of their own players to free agency that they wanted to re-sign. They've never been outbid by anybody else that they really wanted to re-sign. You think about Bernie Williams, almost went to the Red Sox, the Yankees ponied up the cash and brought him back. You know, Posada, Rivera, Jeter, Pettit, all those guys, when they push came to shove, they brought him back. They let Robinson Cano walk because they didn't want to pay Robinson Cano $240. Aaron Judge is a guy who I think it would be really hard for them to let go. They have the money, and if it comes down to a bidding war with the Mets, it's going to be a really, really fascinating scenario here in New York.
Yeah, that would be incredibly cool for sure. And if you're a Blue Jay fan, you're hoping Steve Cohen steps up, and he heads to Queens, right? Get the hell out of the Bronx. We don't need you in the AL East anymore. Good luck with the book, Mark. We really appreciate you taking time. Thank you for doing this.
You got it. Thank you, guys.
There's Mark Feinstein of MLB.com and MLB Network.
I think Cohen would be licking his chops to do something like that. He seems like that kind of guy.
It's a grand slam, too, right? To steal from the Yankees, too. Like that, it's such a statement in that market. Like, that never happens. The Mets don't steal from the Yankees, ever. And you talk
maybe
about,
that's part of him not signing the deal, man. You don't know what the hell goes on behind closed doors, like little agent talk. Oh,
yeah.
If you just sit and be patient, maybe there's 350 waiting for
I wouldn't be surprised.
Is Scott Boras his guy? Is he going to wear a Scott Boras hat the whole time, the whole season, basically?
That's what Gerrit Cole did. Remember Gerrit Cole when he was leaving Houston?
Exactly.
Shows up at the winter meetings in a Boras hat. Like,
man,
why not just, you know, paint your face?
Yeah,
you,
exactly.
Face off like Nick Cage and John Travolta. Just become Scott Boras.
Yeah.
Show up and start doing your pressers.
That would be enticing.
That would be
you
a shocking
You want to make a splash
shift.
like keep him in the same city, but just bring him over to the Mets, just but on a monster deal.
Well,
like, that's
it would have to be, right? Because, and I think from the leverage standpoint, judges, people are probably thinking if the Mets pony up, the Yankees will have to as well. You can't lose him across town to the Mets, you know? Like, it'd be one thing if he left for the Dodgers or something. Like, the Mets, I don't know. I'm not sure that would go over so well.
Speaking of face-off, Hazy, if you were single and you were heading down south for a weekend, who from TSN would you do a face-off with for the vacay?
Interesting question. That is interesting. Let me put some thought into that, because you need a lot of different reasons, you know, to pick and choose whoever it's going to be. Clout, you know, good looks, clearly, yeah. But I, you know, access, right? Like, even down in TSN, there's some big shooters here at TSN. You get down to South Beach or something like that, you're going to Vegas, and, yeah, and you've got face-off with Rod Smith or something. That's going to push some weight down there. You show up as Rod Smith in South Beach.
Take a break, and I'll tell you my answer. It might shock you.
Okay, really? We'll get to that answer, and we have a final tally of the 50-50 out for the Battle of Alberta. And it
10
is a
million?
Massive number.
I was on it. I bought $200 worth
of tickets. You contributed to it. You're still here, so that means you didn't win anything.
Did not win, no.
Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, so we always marvel at the 50-50 jackpot in Alberta. That, like, that's the 50-50 capital of the world, is it not? The amount of money that gets pumped in, it has to be. And the final 50-50 jackpot, which was a multi-day tally, I'm assuming, was it for both home games, Noodles? And you could probably buy
so.
On off days.
Yeah, you could buy, and I think it was, it closed out last night, and then you can buy today for, like, tomorrow and if there's a game on Saturday type of thing. But
right,
yeah,
they'll roll this over for sure.
It's big cash.
So the 50-50 wrapped up at 9.1 million Canadian, and the winner took home 4,599,250. So about 4.5 million. Can you imagine that winning ticket? Imagine you're an Oiler fan. Your team's up 3-1 on the Battle of Alberta, the Flames, and you just took home 4.5 cash.
It's pretty impressive, actually.
What a day. Yeah, what a feeling. Like that's a legit jackpot. Like in Toronto, we have like our 50-50s are like $12. You know, winning ticket gets $6. Thank you.
It's not a big thing here, but
it's like $8,000 max.
It's never that high, ever. Never.
Yeah. It is life changing out there. But I mean, there's a lot of, you know, gambling and bingo and you name it. Like, I've got buddies who are into it big time, big time. But it's, I bought in. I had my buddies Dan and Shayla buy tickets because they're residents, right? Like, we're not allowed to buy. You have to be a resident of Alberta to be able to purchase it online.
Right.
So you go in with groups. That's what you do. Buy $100 worth of tickets or whatever.
It's a bit of a risky game, man, because if that winning ticket pops up and you hear from them again, then
that's true.
What
but
are you going to do? Sue them?
I don't know.
Tell them to fly back from, you know, wherever
Turks
they are,
Caicos.
Mexico or Turks and Caicos, exactly.
Exactly. They've gone to a country and that's it. It's gone. But, I mean, it would. I like to hear the good stories. Like somebody won. That always drove me nuts. And listen, a lot of people play. What is it here? I play the lotto 649 in that. I have a standing order every. You know, it just comes out of your account or whatever.
Okay.
$5 per draw or whatever it is.
Throw your name in the hat. Why not?
Yeah, throw your name in the hat. But like, you hate. You know, the stories where it's like a 98-year-old man who's won it. Like, you're like, what's he going to do with $10 million?
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I want to hear a young couple, a 28-year-old couple that just got married or try, you know,
well,
really struggling.
Well, the proposal last night, an Oiler fan and a Flame fan. I think the guy was an Oiler fan. I think the woman was a Flames fan. And, I mean, the place was rocking. It was like the third period. The game's tied. Like, you know, the people around him are like, come on, dude. Like, okay. You know, I guess. Like, what are we giving you, a clap? Like, it's 3-3 in the third. Like,
exactly.
Congratulations. She said yes.
Outrageous.
But, like, come on. You know, we're here. It's go time. We're in the Battle of Alberta here. You can't be stealing the limelight.
Exactly.
I know a guy that won the 50-50 at a World Junior game, and he wanted to climb over in the glass and strangle the guy in the penalty box announcing it because he wanted to keep it on the down low. He had a divorce coming down the pipe.
Yeah, that one. Did they name names?
Yeah, Hop I
think they did.
Yeah,
I
see, that's terrifying. They... Like, if you're if the separation,
dude, he
started...
wanted. Oh, he wanted to shove it in his jeans and just say nothing to see here at all.
Yeah, I'll claim that in a Swiss bank account, please. Exactly. You can take 20% if you need to. Yeah. All right, hour two coming up. We got Nick Foligno and Jerry's Percentages. Jerry will join us at 5:30. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.